You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
And welcome to the 45th episode, Take the Initiative of
In Response,
a legacy podcast.
I'm Philipp Klein.
I am Daniel.
And I'm Peter Plank.
And we talk about the European Legacy Masters.
Today.
So basically this is like kind of a special episode for us because the European Legacy Masters took place last weekend. Mm-hmm. Today's Monday.
Today's Monday, so it was finished yesterday.
And it took place in Bologna at the Four Seasons Tournament Series. And we wanted to be the first ones to get to talk about this nice little tournament.
Yeah, little is a very big
understatement,
yeah. Because what was the, I think, 480 players in the main event?
Yeah, that was the Four Seasons main event on Sunday. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Bologna has exploded. And this point,
with Legacy.
With Legacy, yeah. Yes, of course. Hashtag Legacy is dead.
Long live Legacy. And before we dive into this episode, we got to thank our patrons, Christian Neutz and Matt Duncan. Thank you for supporting the cast and making all this possible. If you want to join this elite club of people, of our listeners.
Of patrons.
Of patrons, yeah. Then join us on patreon.com/response_legacy.
You can grab yourself a nice pack of stickers, or I think there's also a nice mug.
And also you've got to get an invite to our Discord.
Sure.
So let's dive in. Okay, at first, did you watch the coverage? The coverage was insane because of two reasons, but at first you can answer.
I mean, I had a watch, definitely. I mean,
tried.
You tried. For me, the first experience was like, okay, I wanna join the stream because it's 11 now and the album should start. And well, I think it started actually
at 11 o'clock.
At 11, but then afterwards, after a few minutes, I don't know exactly, it all went down and there was no notice whatsoever. And then everybody was asking, okay, what's happening with the stream? Have there some kind of delay? I don't know, with the people that have registered or something like this. I don't know. And you actually just posted a picture of a guy being on the floor with an open PC. Like the fan is all out and everything. And it seems okay. Technical issues at heart.
Do you remember what was written in Twitter? They are minor issues.
pretty minor. I mean, it depends what the issue was, but I have no clue.
Should be a minor part of the PC.
You probably stood next to this. And
oh yeah, I definitely did.
What happened there?
I lived the booth live there. And was really in the first row when I witnessed all this. I mean, shout out to Arunka, to Inigo Villamore. Mm-hmm. He and Nicolo and Samuele made all the setup for the stream and made everything look great with the transitions and everything. And then they wanted to try to start streaming, and suddenly the PC didn't recognize the microphone. And what they did was, okay, let's just restart this whole thing. Maybe it will recognize it then. And then the PC didn't restart.
Just out of nowhere.
Didn't restart anymore at the beginning of the round. And that was just so fucked up. And for the first 10 minutes, we didn't know what we could do. And then Samuele thought, yeah, maybe he has his laptop with him and we can start streaming with this. So yeah, that that basically worked, but the problem was we had to set up everything beforehand, everything again.
Oh, yeah.
And what took us, I think, 2 hours before, took us only 20 minutes this time because we all worked so hard together. And in the meantime, Rancor has brought from a guy from Spain, I think his name was David, and they together fixed up the PC, but they did the streaming solely on the laptop.
Okay, really.
That was also the problem. We lost some frames here and there, and the stream wasn't that stable because of that.
It was noticeable, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, but they told me that they didn't want to pause the stream and
build up the viewership again. Yeah.
Because we were over 400 viewers at that moment, so they figured maybe we can just pull the stream off with the laptop. And yeah, they did pretty great, actually. So, but this was, I mean, the more you plan, the more things can go wrong. But of course, nobody plans for a broken PC at the start of the round.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that can happen, of course, but it's very unfortunate and bad luck. But at which point did they fix the PC at some point?
Yeah, they fixed the PC, and I think it was in the third round or something.
In the third round, okay. Yeah. So it was not a minor issue.
No, not really.
What was the problem? Do you know?
Okay. I don't know, and I haven't asked, but suddenly the PC worked again and everything went smooth.
Yeah, okay. That's
no idea. I think
that's how it is.
Yeah, I think they have used the PC then again for the Four Seasons main event.
Yeah.
Because I think the stream was much more stable and fluent. Yeah.
The only thing that I noticed, I don't know if you had, you were basically there all the time. I didn't know if you catch the main event, but Peter, I don't know if you also did. But I noticed sometimes that there was a kind of an echo. That sometimes some parts when they said something that it was repeated all the time.
On Sunday.
Okay. Some bits were like coming twice. If they say our next player is, and then it repeats again.
Okay. So,
maybe it was just for me, I don't know. But you didn't notice something like this.
Okay. I didn't get that because I was only there for the ELM.
Yeah.
And it was such a hard weekend because I went there on Friday evening by train, and my train departed at 9 p.m. And I was there at 5:20 in the morning.
What do you do there?
Eat at McDonald's?
typically time to go to McDonald's.
Actually, nothing is open in Italy at this point. So even we went by a Burger King, they were closed, so...
I mean, does Burger King have a breakfast option?
I think so.
I don't know what they have.
I'm pretty sure they have, yeah.
Okay.
And what I really... I don't know if I find it funny. I find it more mesmerizing and really wonderful is that when you go to an Italian person and ask them something want to know something, and you try it in Italian, that they're so incredibly helpful.
Really?
It's amazing. Everyone goes out of their way and tries to help you if you at least try to use their language. So that was pretty cool to witness, because we went outside of the central station, of the train station, and we had to take the bus to the venue. And it was like, it's not written anywhere to get the tickets, and Even this quick Google search doesn't give you all the information. And then I asked some bystander in my really bad Duolingo Italian where to get the bus tickets. And he was pretty helpful. He said we should go over there and there. And he didn't know any English.
Okay.
He just told me everything in Italian and with hands and feet, but it worked out. We found the booth to get our tickets, and then it was pretty easy. Took the right bus, and I gotta say the public transportation in Bologna works great.
It works really.
It works really great. The buses are on time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
it seems like a nice option when we at a little point in maybe next year we will also go to Bologna again, maybe to maybe use the train. Oh, yeah. Maybe in a more like relaxed fashion, not like the overnight train and then don't have anything sleep.
Really. I'm really liking the overnight thing because we went overnight on the previous iteration of the Four Seasons, but with the car.
With car, yes,
exactly. And with like a sleeping schedule in the car. So it was like, yeah. I mean, really liked it for it wasn't even stressful at all.
I think it's fine, but for me personally, I wouldn't take the overnight train if I wanted I needed to play on the next day.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
If I would do it one day in advance before, yeah, then it's completely fine with me.
Yeah, because
but I need a little. I think you can recall. You need a little bit of relaxing and a bit of recovering.
Yeah, because
it's not really a great sleep, right?
It's so hard. I slept only 1.5 hours.
Yeah,
because I was so
you're excited.
And I couldn't sleep, and it was like all the thoughts running through my head all the time, and I only catch 1.5 hours sleep on Friday. And then when we got to the venue, we had to get a little bit of a downtime. We got a little bit to relax and drank a coffee. And I even get to play some games with Jonas.
Okay.
Where I got completely wrecked. but yeah, then the venue opened and we got us some breakfast and... And suddenly, and over time, one more people came in. At first, it was only the vendors who put their stuff in. And mm-hmm. It was pretty amazing to see, actually. And then the work began. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, I had almost 20K of steps on this day. Because I did so much running around all the time with basically everything.
So you did help the coverage team.
I did help set up the prices. I did pretty much everything Nicolo needed me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And how well did our sponsoring with the proxies went with the
playtest tools?
Yeah.
I gotta admit, I didn't talk to a lot of people.
Okay.
But as far as I know, people love them.
Okay.
So everybody wanted more of them. The only problem was there was not everybody was happy with the thing that they got because we
put it in random,
it in reverse,
right? Yeah.
So that nobody could see the front, and then we shuffled it up like a deck, and then everybody got one as a promo on random, the player seating at random, and there were. And it was funny because people were trading in between rounds the duels.
Okay, nice.
And even asking around, but it was so great.
So they really, really wanted to get themselves the perfect duel for themselves, which is really nice. And I think they're really gorgeous. So if you haven't had a look at them, I think there should be some pictures on the Elm website, right?
Yeah.
I think so,
definitely need to check them out. Or if you are one of the lucky persons that got one, so congrats.
And if you have a Scrabble and you want it signed by me, then...
Same goes for Tundra, yeah?
Or Tundra by Peter. then that pretty much can work in the next iteration of the Four Seasons tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and besides that, yeah, the...
European Legacy Masters.
Yeah. And besides that, the tournament was... running pretty great, I think, because the tournament was how do you say this? It was cut off from the coverage team. So the
tournament, it was a different room?
Yeah, it was a different room, and the tournament itself was run by the judges.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't came in contact here, and so the tournament itself was really, really smooth. And yeah, we had some coverage issues, because I went there to make in between rounds coverage with interviewing the guests.
Yeah, that's what I was missing, and I wanted to ask you about this.
Because
what happened with that?
Yeah, at first we didn't have the time,
Okay.
The first two to three rounds. Then we had the time. We try. Okay, I need to go a little bit further back. At first, I had a cameraman. Mm-hmm. I thought I had a cameraman.
You thought?
Who would hold the gimbal with the phone. Mm-hmm. And I could have interviewed my guests. Yeah. But the problem there was my cameraman got sick on Friday morning.
Ah.
So I had no one to do this.
So you would have...
I tried to do it myself.
Okay.
And the problem there was... at the first time I tried it myself, it was like, okay, I only have my phone here and I have the camera, the OBS Ninja open. I have my person here to interview and I am in a different room now. How do I know when I'm on stream? How do I can get the guys in the coverage team to give me a go or to give them a go? Because I didn't have a second person to...
That's actually one of the things that we had a little bit of a problem when we streamed at our local game store. We just solved it when you were ready and then you just give a thumbs up into the camera and then it was up and running. Maybe this was the best idea. It's just one way to communicate. But of course, you don't have a second phone where you can get messages.
And the problem there was because they needed me to do it when they were finished talking. And it was kind of messed up. At first, it simply doesn't... It hasn't functioned.
Yeah.
I didn't get the sign that it worked.
Yeah, this was a problem.
You need kind of a producer that is on the OBS functioning, and you need an earpiece, and the guy that is organizing this needs a microphone.
Yeah. Or I need someone just to call board. It with a WhatsApp messenger or something, or someone who that watches the stream that I can go now, and someone who gives me the go that I can start.
Yeah.
And... So the first interview time was totally butchered. We didn't use that. And in the next round, we tried it, but...
It didn't work? Was it the one with the black screen?
No. Okay. It worked, actually.
Okay.
Because this was kind of funny, because in that time, Luke went with me.
Yeah.
And to give me the thumbs up when we can start. Mm-hmm. But then... He said, we can start, but then it didn't work, and then it didn't work again, and then it didn't work again. And on the fourth try with Gianmarco Pagano, we actually could interview him.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the next minor issue. Somehow I have a loose contact in my phone.
A loose contact?
A loose contact because the microphone gets slotted into the USB-C slot.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work.
Was it the same issue that I had when I was doing the recording?
Yeah, it was the same issue that you had.
So no audio.
So no audio.
Oh no!
When we recognized that, we took out the microphone and made it just with the audio from the phone, and that was a problem that the viewers couldn't really hear my guest. And I underestimated the background noise in the hall.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's just too much, yeah. You need a microphone.
Yeah.
A pointed microphone where you can just exclude all the background noise.
Yeah, that would be great. And I think I have learned a lot in this ELM for things I need to do floor reporting. But yeah, I hope I can do it better next time, and I will certainly try it more in FNMs.
Yeah. Daniel, do you have an aux port in your phone, or do you have a single USB?
Just single USB. And the newer ones don't have it.
And I think you kind of have to switch to a phone or any other device that you can use streaming that has a dedicated aux port.
Unless there's a nice Bluetooth microphone. I don't know.
Or a nice Bluetooth
there
microphone.
Are any Bluetooth microphones that are you can use with the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know this, but...
I searched so much on Amazon.
There are none.
There are none.
And technically, you can use like headphones with an inbuilt microphone. This would work. But the quality is just not good.
Yeah, you'd it lose just a lot doesn't of look good. I mean, I built a microphone case where I can put in the small microphone, the Bluetooth microphone, that so that it looks good on stream, but I couldn't use it because it didn't work. And I was just fed up there.
I mean, you could just use like a blank one just for holding, but the Bluetooth connection to the phone is audio quality-wise really bad.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So in that sense, you need a cable. I'm not sure if the doing this stuff with a smartphone at all is the best option.
You can use a camera or something like that.
Yeah,
but then you can't live stream it via OBS Ninja.
Yeah, but how does it work when I think Chewlink Nub, for example, does live stream with a camera.
Mm-hmm.
So he uses the input.
Or Unseed, right?
And Unseed too. So you have a camera setup that you can use. Yeah. Maybe you have to be like cabled.
You have to be cabled.
A cable connection to the computer, but maybe you can use like a 20 meter connection. Then you can set up an interview area outside the streaming room, and then it can work. Yeah.
This would be more stable, of course, but a lot more budget, a lot more effort.
And then we're talking about like to 1,000 euros for a camera.
Yeah. For like 5 minute talk. I mean, it's a cost question.
We just have to get this going with the phone, and then it will work.
Yeah.
It's just some minor issues, actually.
But everything are minor issues, as we heard.
Yeah, everything's a minor issue.
So, besides all this technical talk, that's just that we don't drift into this all that much. How was the event in general, like player-wise?
We had 75 players.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, not everyone could attend because of the Italian strike. Yeah. So, the Finns weren't coming.
All were on the same flight and the flight got cancelled.
Yeah. So they couldn't come and some other guys got sick and we didn't heard anything from Hungary and some guys just didn't appear actually.
It happens.
84 players, 75 attending, while four got the flight cancelled. I mean, five persons who didn't attend.
Mm.
That's basically a really, really good number here. And we played 7 rounds plus cut off top 8.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, the breakout deck of the day took it all down.
It was kind of foreseeable, I think.
Really?
Yes. If you have looked at recent results from online meta games, it should be pretty clear.
Yeah,
I think it was one of the up-running and suddenly good performing decklists in all challenges and all big events from Magic Online.
But the first real challenge with the cards was on the Sunday prior to the ELM. So we had 1 week to prepare.
It was won by Peter van der Ham on Mono White Initiative.
Yeah.
A friend of him and the teammates that also built the deck went top 8 with the deck. And I think he lost to Peter.
Mm.
And they were a 10-person team that mm-hmm. made the deck list, the Mono White deck list. They played via Discord and stuff like that. And Peter said he was like really sad that they moved the cards onto MTGO like a week or 2 weeks prior to the tournament because he wanted to take the tournament by storm, win it. Nobody can do anything against it because like no deck list would have been out.
This would have been so great, yes. I mean, it is still very good. Still performed very good. And it's still, I think, besides this previous event from the Magic Online Meta game, This Elm event is still like one of the bigger and high stakes events that really shows that in general we see a little bit of a shift in meta game for Legacy. For a long time it has been very stalled, and now this White Stompy deck shakes things quite a bit up, I think.
Yeah,
and it's insane.
The question is, of course, in a good way or not. This is up to the debate, of course, but it is there and you need to respect it. And this represents in the numbers here as well. We have the meta game open here. It's still Delver is the most played deck from the Elm. It is 16% and then followed up by the White Stompy deck at 12%.
So this is decks with three or more players.
Yep. Yeah.
So we exclude all the 1 and 2 players here.
But this meta game shows, I mean, this is not like, this meta game is definitely not like the meta game that was in the last few weeks or months, even from of course, because the cards didn't exist. But we see that it positions itself at the top level of Legacy within a few weeks when the cards have been released to the crowd, let's say.
I think one of the the most important features of this deck is it's good blue red Delver matchup.
Yeah, of course it needs to be.
Yeah,
you need to beat
that. That's something that the meta hadn't had for a really long time.
I mean,
lands was the only thing that was kind of
green red depths or something.
It's a matter of question. I think that you can build easily a deck that is good against Delver, that crushes Delver, but it is not only Delver in the meta game. You need to face other decks as well. You need to beat Control, for example. How do you beat Control? Well, just take the initiative. This works. In that case, grind them out. It is insane.
Oh yeah, the grinding power of White Stomp or the initiative cards in general is insane, yeah.
I don't know about you, but what do you actually have in mind? Because I'm thinking to myself, this White Stomp, I think, well, Chalice okay is good against combo decks, for example. And there is the, I thought originally, okay, this is just big, valuable creatures that you slam onto the table. How will they do against Doomsday or any big combo deck? How do they just win? Or against Storm, whatever. And it turns out cards like, I don't know, Archon of Emeria. Some decks have Thalia in the main deck.
Yeah, turn one, Archon of Emeria is really, really strong.
I honestly kind of fear this deck more than Modern Red Stompy when I'm playing Storm.
It's just crazy. A fast clock.
It is crazy.
Some of them are even playing Suppression Field, if I remember correctly.
Sometimes,
which is also a card that is like okay, but can be really, really bad when you are on the draw.
Yeah.
So, White Stompy has a lot of stuff, and I think it's something that is like the same as the Delver problem. If you have a good deck or a good archetype like Tempo or in this case Stompy, and there's a lot in card advantage, it's a little bit harder. And I think the White Stompy decks are really underexplored right now. I mean, of course they are underexplored, they're like a week old, and stuff like that gets innovated from like Rodrigo Tugores, which also went top 8 in the tournament with his red version, which played like Adventure
to
of
get over the top 8 in a second, yeah.
Yeah, but for the initiative deck, like, he switched the Chrome Mox for Mox Diamond, which just makes much more sense.
Absolutely.
Because you get a land from the first initiative trigger, so it makes sense you discard lands because you will flood anyway and not discard any more card advantage engines, which are the initiative cards.
Absolutely. I think the question remains here a little bit if the good performance of this White Stompy deck is due to the fact that there is no deck that is able to beat it consistently, or the meta is shaped around in such a way that the decks that would normally do are
actually
not good anymore.
Actually, there is a deck who has 100% win percentage against White Stompy.
Okay, which deck and what are the exact numbers? I'm interested.
Okay, I mean, the sample size is pretty
low. It's pretty low, right?
Yeah, it's pretty low.
But let's have a look at the numbers, yeah?
What do you think? I mean, I'll let you guess.
I have one guess.
Peter, you're first. What do you think is the deck that has 100 win percentage against White Stompy?
Delver can't be. Control is no way. No. Doomsday feels hard. Elves, we established is bad against it in the pre-talk, which is not exclusive, unfortunately, for our Patreon members only. It's really hard. Is it? No.
Death in Texas would be interesting. But
Death in Texas would be interesting.
I don't think so. This is can't be the case, right?
I can't think of a deck that has a really, really good matchup against
it. I have two guesses, actually.
I will put in the wild guess. It's Defend Texas.
Okay, I have two other guesses, actually. My first guess would be Reanimator. And the second guess would be Zephyrlit Breakfast.
It can't be Reanimator because Reanimator lost in the finals against Mono White Initiative.
Yeah, true.
But you're really on a great track here. I can't find the numbers now on the Discord because I'm not that active on the Discord. But as far as I know, and I think Nathan Lippitz and our Faulted Form has posted it, it's Oops All Spells.
Oops All Spells. Okay. Like a hyper fast combo deck. Yeah, I can get behind this. Yeah.
I think they have about 10 matches played in and are 10-0 against Dungeon Stompy.
Yeah, okay. I figured it must be some kind of really, really hyper aggressive aggro deck. Yeah, I completely messed the Reanimator loss in the top 8 out. Yeah, it's my part. But makes sense. Oops All Spells is they can't really do against anything on
turn 1. I think they played 4 Leyland of the Void and this deck is made to beat Leyland of the Void.
Yeah. It loses mainly to kind of force and stuff like this interactions and.
Not that for
problematic creatures that tend to be on the battlefield on average, like on turn 2.
Yeah.
Like an Archon or maybe a Thalia, but an Archon or something
even
like
that. Even an Archon doesn't do anything against it.
It doesn't. This is the big thing, yeah. And then even that, on average, would probably come down like turn 1.5, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe closer to turn 2. Absolutely, but it makes sense.
This was just a little side note here, and I'm not sure if that data is
correct.
Not that it's correct, but more it's recent. So it's some days ago that I saw the tweet, not weeks but days. So everything works falls out that fast at the moment. So even data that's one day old can be outdated right now.
So why don't we talk about the top 8? In a little bit more detail.
At first, also, when we go back to the meta game, just one little shout out. We have 4% black mid-range.
Yeah.
And that's pretty funny because it was all of the Italian team.
All?
All the wooded team was playing black mid-range, yeah.
Is it like the Helm combo?
I haven't taken a look at it. I got
because I think typically they name it Black Midrange when it contains this Leyland of the Void Helm combo with...
No, not Leyland. I think there is the deck list that goes like... tries to go for the turn 2 Sheldred with Dark Ritual. I mean, he plays for sure the Doughty Voidwalkers, but I don't think they play Helm.
Okay,
because I don't think they play Leyland in the main deck.
Okay,
I'm going to take a look at Lorenzo's
deck.
He played it.
How did the deck go in general?
Pretty bad, right?
Yeah, pretty bad. I can't imagine it.
Black midrange had a 35% win percentage. I mean, it went 7-13.
This is like the typical deck that loses to days. I mean, come on.
There was Mono Black Depths, which went 2-10 for a 16.67%
percentage. Wow,
this,
pretty
this,
strong.
No, so this is definitely one of the decks that I wouldn't bring. I definitely want to play against Delver, for example.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense for me.
So, and I think they have a pretty not optimal win percentage against Mono White Initiative. So it was like, maybe they thought it was like a little bit more controlly. Yeah. So the matchups are better, but with a really, really fast crowd, it doesn't make... It's unfortunately a bad meta call.
Yeah, true. But now we're going to the part that everyone waits for.
It's top 8.
With our dump talk here.
And we have, in the quarterfinals, Savatarix, Kai Savatari on Doomsday.
With a spicy one-off in the sideboard. I may want to add here.
What was this?
Spoils in the sideboard.
Spoils of the
spoils
Vault.
Spoils of the Vault. Very nice, yeah.
One of in the sideboard. Very, very nice.
Then we have I Came to Game, which is Marc-Eric Vogt, mm-hmm. winner of Bologna 2019.
His own typical take of four-color control, a little bit different from the one that Ossiman Diaz taken to first place finish in a challenge not a long time ago.
Okay.
Ossiman Diaz played...
he played the fart.
This is the Mark special, but
also it's not from Mark. The twart was
it is not from Ozymandias,
but it's not from Mark either. He learned this card from another one that posted it.
Okay,
in his
form. It's from Force of Phil. From Phil.
Is it from Force of Phil?
Okay.
From Phil Blackman.
But I just wanted to say that this deck is pretty much the same as the Ozymandias has used to win the challenge.
And
but
he a second Mystic Sanctuary.
Yes, and he the only thing that I wanted to say is it doesn't play any Endurance. This is the big difference.
Oh wow, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Now that you say it.
But Ozymandias played plays it in the 75, for example. Yeah.
So what you're telling me that Griffith Hate is on the low right now?
For Mark, it was. he only played a Containment Priest, I think, yeah?
A single Containment Priest.
And that's it, yeah, for Graveyard Interaction.
And I think the Containment Priest is more for elves than for Reanimator.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, for elves specifically, I think either from one Canonist would have been a little bit better, but yeah.
Yeah, true.
But of course, yeah.
I mean, it matters against Initiative too.
It matters, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they don't get the last chapter.
What I like about this list is that Dress Down and Top Orb are very, very big on the menu right now. They deal very greatly with the initiative deck and all of other problematic stuff that kind of runs around.
Yeah. Then we have two times the best meal of the day.
Oh, yeah.
Cephalid Breakfast from Eric Shanto from Slovakia and Daniele Terra from Italy.
Know your own lists.
No, you're
both of them not.
60 card, poor efficiency.
I love
step
this.
Through to the win.
That would be a breakfast list that I would play also.
Me too.
Because it despises everything that's Yorion.
Yeah.
I simply can't get myself to play Deathdex with Yorion. I can't get myself to play any kind of control deck with Yorion. Because, I mean, you would call my hands in Austria, these are toilet seats, yeah? Klodeckel, like we would say. These are pretty huge.
And
Do you know what the same with guys with big hands?
That's a different discourse.
Find it out at our only... if I sleeve my deck in KMC hard sleeves double, these are basically like commander decks.
Yeah.
And I can shuffle a Yorion deck like this, but it's not enjoyable. And
agree.
I want to have a little bit of fun also in playing and not just shuffling all the time. So
this deck is nice. Have you looked at the deck lists? I mean, this is pretty straightforward, just a typical combo deck. I hope that it is good in general because Cephalid Breakfast, I love these decks with this historic legacy names.
Me too.
And the problem is, I think this deck might be just... Or not just, but one of the big reasons why it fared good is because Graveyard Hate is an all-time low.
Yeah.
This is my suggestion or my guess. But anyways, this deck is nice. I really love it.
Yeah, that's true. It's certainly not that good if Graveyard Hate is high.
Yeah.
Because the plan B with Stoneforge Mystic into Kaldra is good.
It is
it's good against control, but it's not... That insane. The plan A from Cephalid Illusionist and Nomads in Core is just so much better.
Yeah.
You just have to win. I know that
what
you
is Virtuous Ruin?
You don't know Virtuous
this
Ruin?
Is, this
it's
is
a card
the best,
from Portal.
Best card against Mono White Initiative.
Because it clears the board.
It clears the board.
Destroy all white creatures.
I think
and then
for sure
with the Illusionist.
This is a really nice... A really nice addition to the deck.
Attack with a Narcomoeba.
I think this makes total sense. However, one question to you.
I even got a Virtuous Ruin.
I have one question to you, though. How? I mean, we know that the Italian meta is pretty heavy control driven.
Yeah, the Italian meta, but the ELM meta was
Yeah, man. Yeah. But the Cephal Attack also did make a top 8 at the normal main event. And the control is really big in Legacy.
Yeah,
really
Jeskai heavy, yeah, usually.
In Italy. Yeah, how does Cephal Breakfast beat control? I just can't get my mind behind it. It's like a 2 or 3 off. How?
It's like a 2 or 3 off. You got enough time with the Stoneforge Mystic plan.
But I think the Stoneforge Mystic plan is really bad against control.
I mean, you kind of have...
bad against control?
You have Urza's Saga too.
You can just sort the token and it's gone.
But you have Urza's Saga. You have
Urza's Saga, this is true. Yeah, but you have control decks play Dresdon right now. To a big extent.
And Dresdon is also really good against...
Did you have a look at Angelo's decklist? He played 4 Dresdon main deck.
Oh, that's sick. That's
which Angelo?
So
Angelo Cadet.
Okay.
He played the Jeskai control version. It is just...
Angelo Cadet is basically the godfather of Jeskai control lists in Italy.
Actually, Miracles back in the day. Yeah. Yeah, with Senses the Divining Top. But
he played
still
4.
4 Dresdon main deck. How can you beat this?
You dodge it,
apparently.
You have to surgically in the side.
Yeah.
But yeah, seems like pretty hard. On the good side of the matchups for the day. But I always fear Cephal Breakfast, to be honest.
It is,
because it has like 2 very, very distinct plans.
True.
And always when I said like, ha-ha, I have the combo plan sealed up, they go...
Stoneforge Mystic Caldera
and beat you.
And then I think like, okay, now I have to, I mean, maybe I even have the Swords of Plowshares in hand.
Yeah.
I have to Swords of Plowshares at them. And then they go, Nomads.
Illusionist.
Yeah. I completely agree.
And that's a problem I have with all these kind of combos like Food Chain, Cephal Breakfast, Allure,
yeah.
It's always the same.
It's always the same, and it's so... I think these decks can only lose if they lose against themselves.
Yeah, kind of.
It feels like.
Allurin specifically has a very good control matchup, just because they can outgrind any control deck.
Yeah, you just mid-range them out.
Strix, Kotal, whatever. Maybe Shardless Agent, whatever. It is just insane.
Food Chain also. I mean, Sword your Mistral Griffin. Okay, I play them again.
Yeah. That's the reason why Red Elemental Blast is so huge in this matchup, because you can put the Griffin into the grave.
Get
down there, buddy.
It's buried now. But
anyways, love to see it. Move on a little bit. Breakfast deck.
Yeah, also Daniele Terra was on Cephal Breakfast. He was on stream 2 times. He would have been on stream 2 times if we would have streamed the first round. But there he won against Javier Dominguez, which is a pretty achievement.
Did he play Breakfast? His Euron Breakfast?
No. Really? Javier played Blue Red Teller.
Interesting. Normally he because for him the Breakfast deck is a pet deck.
Yeah.
But the Euron version typically, yeah. So he took the safe route
and played Teller.
Okay. But Breakfast did perform better.
I mean, didn't he went second in the spring, in the June one.
With Breakfast, yeah.
Yeah.
Breakfast is good. He played the finals versus Meguchi. So.
Yeah.
Then we have in 3rd and 4th place, Baku 91 on Blue
Alberto
Red Delva.
Manchado.
Nice.
And Rodrigo Tugares.
So basically,
two Spanish guys.
And the second Slovakian comes up in a little bit. Yeah, we have Boris Initiative. He said, like, yeah, I just want to have more
initiative cards.
Be good against the mirror.
Yeah, and be good against the mirror. Yeah, he played
Defender of Chaos,
the new tech.
It's a 3 mana card with protection from white.
And flash.
And flash.
Yeah, very good.
But the problem with this is Aven Mindset
is also such a good card currently.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if we saw it in action in some of the matches. I don't know.
Yeah, we saw it.
We saw it? Okay.
He played it against Mark, I'm pretty sure. Because he played like the promo card that is old boarded in foil. So, pretty sure. And Touch the Spirit Realm. It's like basically the breakout card of the tournament. If you're talking about individual cards.
It is a very good card, yeah.
Yeah. It's a glorified O-ring.
What does it do?
It's an O-ring.
Okay.
But you can channel it and exile target artifact or creature, and it basically flickers. It's a flicker wisp effect.
Ah, okay. That's pretty nice.
Which is, for example, good versus put your own Barret Large.
You can flicker your own things.
You flicker for initiative.
You flicker it's for initiative, so dumb. Yeah.
Yeah, but of course it can be used against Barret Large as well. Yeah.
And you can clear blockers away.
Yeah.
And I think the winner of the tournament said he won't leave the house again without four of those.
I think Tugores said that also.
Or yeah. Tugores. Okay.
Yeah. He says this is one of the best cards in the deck. Yeah.
Yeah, probably, yeah. And then we had Alberto Manchado on Blue Red Delver. You said this was pretty spicy.
Yeah, it was very spicy. He was also gearing it to beat Control a little bit more, and also the initiative deck, because he plays the nice Minsk and Boo in the sideboard, and as well...
Oh, yeah, Tropical and Minsk and Boo. Two Minsk and Boo.
Kind of a Rock Delver.
And two Unchained Berserker.
Yeah, exactly.
Against Initiative.
And we saw it in action in the stream, where he played it against... I think against which deck?
Alberto Manchado played against...
I think Control, actually.
Yeah, against Angelo Cadet.
And he brought the Berserkers in.
Okay, against Jessica Control.
Because the only removal they have is white.
That's true.
A good card.
Oh, wow.
That's really cool.
Insane.
Because the only answer is basically...
It's white.
Hydroblast.
Hydroblast is the only answer, yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly, yeah.
And if Control has to Hydroblast for a glorified free one, it's like it's a TNN.
And your Minsk and Boo lives then.
Yeah.
Ouch, that hurts.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Oh my god.
So in that sense, I think he mainly wanted to have this card against Control. Of course, also Minsk and Boo. But of course, this is a double edged.
Also initiative, yeah.
Also initiative, yeah. It is.
I like it that it costs one and a red.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you can use your Wasteland.
Yeah, Delver. I saw something on Twitter that basically said Unchained Berserker's old tech now. They're using Blood Knight now because it doesn't die to Gutshot. I'm not sure if it was a meme or not, but I like it because my deck just splashes red and I could play the Unchained Berserkers. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't even be a dumb idea, actually.
I have a question, though. Concerning this talk about Gutshot, why would Gutshot be a problem now? Who plays Gutshot?
I don't know.
I don't know that anybody... Maybe the initiative decks, like in Eldrazi Winter. Do they refer to the Eldrazi Winter? Can you remember that in Modern? Because they played Gutshot in the sideboard.
Yeah, to kill the...
The Mimic.
Yeah.
The Eldrazi the Mimic.
Yeah. The Eldrazi Mimic, yeah. To kill them before the Fortnite here comes
into
play.
Exactly, yeah. This was maybe this was kind of a joke reference.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's why I said I'm not sure if it was a meme or not. But I mean, I can see Blood Knight. It's a 2/2 for 2.
Yeah.
With first strike and protection from white, and white being the premier removal at the moment.
Yeah.
It's pretty strong to have protection from white.
So probably should Bolt is now probably back on the menu in some way.
Yeah, that's true.
Except for the initiative, because the 4-mana 1 is still a 3/4.
Yeah. The season dungeon. Then again, we go to the final list. It's Marco Vera Gonçalves. He sounds pretty Portuguese.
He sounds pretty Portuguese, yeah.
But he's a French guy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. True, yeah.
The run-up was so the second place goes to French, and
to France.
Thank you. My English is not the yellow from the egg, but
but it goes.
But it goes.
But it goes. And he played Reanimator. Yep. What the fuck? What year is it?
Just filling this gap of no graveyard hates, and suddenly this Reanimator deck can be good. Makes sense.
Yeah, and actually Markus Schmidhuber, one of our guys at DLM, played against him, in the first round. Yeah.
It was first round. He kept seven times the three times the seven. And yeah. I mean, you have to have the luck on your side if you want to go far in the tournament. But I haven't seen a lot of him, but the deck list looks really straightforward.
Yeah,
and
nothing special, yeah.
If he plays in this tournament, he plays magic pretty damn well.
Yeah, of course.
That's what we also talked about after the tournament. Everyone in this tournament, even if you go 1 and 2, there is not a single bad player. Not even the last place is a bad player in this tournament because the tournament was so pretty. Excuse my French, fucking stacked right here. There are only big names and really the creme de la creme of the whole Legacy.
There were
world.
Like 6 or 7 GP winners there.
Yes, I think. I think even more.
Yeah, if you're talking about like modern GP winners and stuff like that, yeah,
even more than
It's we had like a world champion.
Yeah, with Mengucci.
With
Javier Dominguez.
Javier. He's on favorite champion.
Yeah, and
Mengucci is a proto winner or like it was an invitational winner.
Mythic invitational winner, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Then
we had Gary Kempel as a GP winner, and
Mark-Erik Vogt, Rodrigo Tugores. He won like 2 GPs,
Something like that.
And then another guy from Spain also won a GP, so it was like.
I think
3 of the 5 guys won a GP, am I right?
I'm not sure if.
Yeah, it was pretty damn stacked, the tournament. Yeah. So
I think the third one was a Pro Tour winner.
Okay.
Was only a pro tour winner.
Just a pro tour, man. Come on.
But yeah, the format was really was just insane, incredibly insane. So everyone at this tournament was a pretty fucking good player.
So as a recap, a pretty successful start for this project.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And hopefully it will continue over the next couple of years and goes on and on and on. Especially this is the exact thing that. The European Legacy scene needed for a long, long time.
This is the exact thing that Legacy or Magic in general would have needed for the last 20 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But of course, I'm referring to the fact more so that Magic, Pro Magic is more supported in America than in Europe. So this as a counterpart is very nice.
Yeah, that's true. And we don't even get an Eternal Weekend. I mean, what the fuck? I mean, We make our Eternal Weekend ourselves and it's better and bigger.
Yeah. It was bigger than the Asia one.
Yeah.
I mean, the Sunday
main event on Sunday had over 480 players.
Yeah,
it
true.
Was bigger than Eternal Weekend Asia. So... fuck you, Watsy.
I mean, it's really, really good. And I think we need some stuff of like a Legacy Pro Tour. And we have it like in the form of the European Legacy Masters as the European Legacy World Championship.
Oh, yeah.
But only for Europe. And I mean, the feedback already starts coming in. The feedback processing already started by the minds behind the European Legacy Masters.
Yeah, we are putting
and
out
we are
the form.
In Monday. Yeah. And the event concluded yesterday, basically, with the Four Seasons. And not everyone is already at home from the organizers. So it's like we're already in the shoes to start running for episode 2, basically.
Yeah, we're already working on it. And basically, shout out to Sami Hardy and Tom the Decker here for their immense efforts and their really hard commitment here. They're already doing Google Forms to send out to reps, to send out to the players of the ELM to get feedback in.
Yeah,
very good. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, the work for next year has already begun.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. And it will be as great, I'm pretty sure, and it will be a very, very big part of our legacy magic in the future.
And what I have to say here right now is we should hurry up because we said this will be just a 30-minute episode. We are going to an hour here.
I was just about to say this is, I think, a nice recap for this episode.
No, we have to talk about the first, about the winner of the whole thing.
Oh, the winner.
I mean, we talked about the winner beforehand, but we can't say his name.
Okay.
It's Samuel Zahorchak, the second Slovakian in the top 8.
Yeah.
The Slovakian made a pretty damn good showing in the tournament.
So you say Dalibor Sego, who has won the last Bologna main event in September, has made a pretty good feel out of the Slovakian players.
True, yeah. They're very good.
He took definitely the right place. I mean, like, how is it called? František. also went top 16 in the ELM. So they had like three guys in the top 16, and Slovakia is not the biggest country of all.
But they had a pretty damn good field.
Yeah, they are always coming to Austria when we have a bigger tournament, and I think their community is much much smaller than ours.
But they're committed.
But they're so committed mm-hmm. and really strong. They do so much testing. Yeah. And I played myself against Samuel when I won the Austrian Legacy Nationals.
Okay.
And yeah, I played against him in the finals in 2019. Yeah. And you can look the stream up. It's the videos on YouTube, and the whole thing was a fucking nail biter.
Yeah.
This was insane where I played Hogak against his I don't know, Buck
Okuuru deck.
Yeah, Buck Okuuru deck. But oh my gosh, I had such an extremely headache, and Samuel is just a great player. I gotta admit,
a great winner.
He's so strong, and he certainly deserves it, because Dalibor said to me, he is always ninth on breakers, and he always misses the big strike. Yeah, the big strike for his portfolio. And I gotta say, I'm so happy for him that he won this. I feel it from my heart, and somebody figured this, you're a great guy.
Absolutely.
And I think these are nice words to conclude.
This episode will air on
Friday or Thursday or Friday. We haven't decided yet.
Maybe on the 8th of December. Yeah. And we have the next one also in schedule for you on the 15th or 16th of December.
One week after. You have to say your socials.
Oh, fuck, I forgot my socials. Yeah, if you want to have some nice impressions from the European Legacy Masters, follow me on Twitter. It's at FinnickMTG, PHINNICKMTG. You can also find the podcast on Twitter. It's at @response_legacy. Peter, where can people find you and see no pictures of the European Legacy Masters?
You're an asshole. I wanted to go there. Next time I will be qualified and take it down.
Yeah, but me too.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. It's at @UnicornLord, but the O in the Lord is always the zero. Where can we find you? You insectable aberration, Daniel.
Absolutely true. This is my second Twitter handle.
It's your for fun account.
That's my twink. But my normal one is at @FlyingDelvo. As always, I'm always flying around in Twitter and looking up everything. And with that,
response. Yeah.
This was In Response, a Legacy Podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.